They saw the danger in that, and so many from the Democrat elite here in office, out of office, in media, in different places, essentially saying our courts have failed us. I guess we're going to have to leave the protection and defense of our democracy to the American people. It's so revealing, Kelsey, how little they think of us, how stupid they think we are, how helpless they think we are, and that we shouldn't have the right to free speech.
All right, everyone. Again, we have come through with one of the most requested guests now for probably at least a couple years, I would say. And so finally with us is one of the most, if I could pick a way to describe her, one of the people that stands so true to what she believes in, so much so that she was willing to give up career, reputation, you name it. I'm sitting across from Tulsi Gabbard, and I'm so stoked to have you here on the show. Not only to see another service member, female service member, an actual woman in power doing something and using her voice with the record that you have. It's an honor to have you here on the show.
Thank you, Kelsey. I know this has been a long time coming, and I think a lot of it was I self-imposed, like, I can't do any podcasts until I finish this book. And so the book is finally done and coming out soon. So here we are.
That's fantastic. I understand. There's something about writing a book that once you're in the flow of things, you do not want to stop.
Exactly. Exactly. And congratulations again on your book. And thank you. You were kind enough to send me a copy with a note and one of your bracelets. And I've heard and followed your, your journey through sharing your story on other people's platforms and podcasts, and just grateful for the impact that you're making for countless people.
Well, thank you. That's wow. I appreciate that. You know, we often, I think, as A-type personalities or people who want to change the world, sometimes we forget that others are actually watching. And we think that at the end of the day, we're kind of alone in this. And that's just not the reality now, is it?
It's not. It's not. And I think even more so with new media and podcasts and social media. There's obviously some negativity that comes with the social media stuff, but that's where, you know, the beauty of free speech is that you can bring in better speech, superior speech, good speech to defeat the stuff that causes darkness.
Well, let's start right into that. I mean, what a great segment into freedom of speech. I don't have that in Canada. You know where I would reside. Oh, you're hearing about this, are you? Are you actually getting through the CRTC guidelines to be able to hear us? I'm really grateful to hear that. We live in this very odd time, and I have an aggressive list of questions and overpreparedness, as my brain does. And I want to start with freedom of speech, because we are seeing this erosion of freedom of speech, not only in our political power, but with our everyday rights, whether it comes to being able to protect your children from government overreach, to things like the TikTok bill, which to me is quite terrifying, seeing how we have actually gone through the final process of Bill C-11 up in Canada. But I want to understand not only how you got to here, but how you have been able to tackle freedom of speech in such an honest and open way. And the fact that you're still here and alive and able, I don't know how to say that nicely and respectfully other than you are still here, Tulsi.
Thank God.
Right?
Seriously, I am grateful for that every day.
I believe it.
You know, it's, where to start on this? You know, so much of my book, For Love of Country, really centers around freedom. You know, for us in America, we have our Constitution, we have our Bill of Rights, we have our Declaration of Independence, all of which are rooted in freedom and the inalienable rights endowed upon us by our Creator. And these freedoms that are enshrined in the Constitution really lay down the guardrails for the limitations of government power and the respect of individual liberty in this country. So freedom of speech, freedom of expression, the right to self-defense, the freedom of religion. I mean, you can go down the list of these fundamental freedoms and how increasingly over time we see how people in power, and again, this is how the founding fathers of America were very visionary in recognizing that too often with human beings, if you are given power, there is, may be an urge to abuse that power and start to take our country away from being a constitutional republic towards some kind of a country oppressed and ruled by a tyrannical government. And as you've seen in your own country, we are seeing many of the same signs of people in power saying, well, we have to take away your freedom to protect you from yourself, or we have to inhibit this right or this freedom for the sake of the greater good or public health or national security or whatever the reasoning may be given. It is often done in an environment where fear is being fomented. Don't worry, big government is going to save you and protect you. You just got to give up some of your rights and some of your freedoms. And this is where, and I'll hone in on the TikTok bill, because this is something that is still actively being considered in our Congress today. It's being sold under the guise of national security. They're saying, oh, you know, this isn't really about TikTok at all. It's about national security. It's about data privacy, data security, and it's about saving the kids. And yet when you actually look at the legislation for what it is, it really is big government, our government, deciding who unilaterally, who is a foreign adversary and who is not, deciding what businesses are allowed to operate in America based on that foreign adversary connection, and then using incredibly vague language, very similar to the ones, the vague language we saw in the Patriot Act. It says that if there is an individual American who is under the influence of or controlled by a foreign adversary, they too would be directly impacted and their platforms or their business would be prohibited potentially under this legislation. You look at the response that's come from this. Anyone who says, you know, you see a lot of these TikTokers went to DC and they're saying, hey, I make my livelihood on TikTok. This is what I use it. It's freedom of speech, freedom of expression. These people have been called traitorous or traitors or treasonous by those either in government or in the media simply for going and taking that position. Those of us who are saying that this is an anti-free speech bill and it takes away our individual rights and civil liberties, much like Ron Paul is saying and others who have been real champions for freedom and liberty their entire lives, they're being called all of these different smear names. And this is the imperative that we have before us, is we are seeing this happening in broad daylight. Too often it has broad bipartisan control, support rather. And we know from our past that once these freedoms and liberties are taken away, it is very difficult, if not next to impossible, to get them back. That's one of many different examples that we are facing of how government is directly and indirectly seeking to take away our freedom. And if we allow them to do it by standing idly by, standing silent, not exercising those freedoms, then we here in the United States of America will increasingly find our country, the country that we love, the country that I and my brothers and sisters in uniform are volunteering to put our lives in the line to support and defend, will become increasingly unrecognizable.
Do you really believe it's not becoming unrecognizable already?
It has already begun. We are well down this road. And I think it's been what I've experienced has been it's kind of been a slow roll. There have been different efforts at different times in this direction. But what we've seen over the last few years, I feel like it has, they just like pedal to the metal, full gas forward, to the point where in this election, we have the Democrat elite in Washington doing everything they possibly can to take away our right to decide who we want to be president and commander in chief in this election, trying to take their biggest opponent, Donald Trump, off the ballot in over 32 different states. And when our Supreme Court ruled unanimously, thank God, they ruled unanimously recognizing that we live in a democratic republic. This system of governance is based on we the people having the opportunity to vote for the candidate of our choosing and not having some body in the government, even the courts, pre-designate who we are allowed to choose from. They saw the danger in that. And so many from the Democrat elite here in office, out of office, in media, in different places, essentially saying our courts have failed us. I guess we're going to have to leave the protection and defense of our democracy to the American people. It's so revealing, Kelsey, how little they think of us, how stupid they think we are, how helpless they think we are, and that we shouldn't have the right to free speech. We are somehow, they think we're not sophisticated enough to be discerning in the information that we are getting to decide, okay, yes, okay, I'm gonna, this is true or this isn't true, or I like what this person says, I don't like what that says. They don't want us to have that right at all. And this is what my book is about. It is about how we've got to come together as Americans for love of country and save her, because otherwise in this pivotal moment, this year in 2024, I really sincerely fear that if those in charge today, the Biden-Harris administration, is allowed to continue this rapid escalation we've seen over the last few years, we will see it get exponentially worse.
I think the biggest concern, and I had this conversation with Mike Baker last week about what's happening in terms of the flood of immigration. We're seeing it come up into Ontario. We are seeing it in our own provinces right above you. We're seeing, you know, the amount of people coming into this country illegally is skyrocketing. And the fact that not only the United States and Canada, for some reason, are perfectly okay with allowing the CCP to send individuals to Ottawa in 2020 and off of Salt Spring Island, off of British Columbia, and seeing them training within our own grounds, it concerns me, because it does feel like at this point, and maybe I'm just being a little nihilistic, but it's hard to not be, so bear with me for a moment. It is really concerning to see when our own government agencies in Canada, including CSIS, have come out and just been radically honest with documents saying this is a hyper concern. We have seen that the current administration in Canada has been bought and paid for. We have seen the CCP come into this country and set up police stations and remove dissidents. We have seen the CCP put people in our capital and train them at the ranges I used to work at, and privately and quietly on Salt Spring Island, having them marching around playing war games. My question to you is, seeing somebody that understands war, which the majority of my guests, that's just the proclivity of where we're at. They are all these fighters and they have seen what real violence looks like. And not a single one of them have been willing to advocate on behalf of Ukraine or on behalf of what's going on in Israel. They are just dumbfounded. So I guess what I'm getting to is, with somebody like you who has seen true violence, how do you look up at the country above you and not become hyper-concerned about the security issues we are seeing here and that are trickling not only down into your country, but also up underneath and coming up the other direction as well?
Yeah. I have been sounding the alarm bells on this to those who aren't paying attention, because when we talk about national security threats, too often it is about, well, some other country in a far off land somewhere else. It's easy for us to feel isolated in this massive landmass with water on both sides of us. It's fortuitous that you asked this question, because I just got back last night from spending a few days on the border in California. It's a part of the border in our country that just hasn't gotten much attention. Unfortunately, the crisis is so great that we're seeing what's happening in Texas. We're seeing what's happening in Arizona. We're seeing what's happening in some of these other southwestern states, how our own National Guard, I served in the National Guard for over 17 years, literally being overrun by hundreds and hundreds of people illegally trying to enter our country. And no coverage, real coverage by the mainstream media. No proclamation from our president saying this is absolutely unacceptable. We are going to mobilize in order to secure our borders. None of this is happening. In fact, we're getting the exact opposite reaction from our president and his administration, which is to say, the borders are secure. What are you talking about? Or conversely, after saying that for over 3 years, saying, well, if only the other party, if only the Republicans would get out of the way, then we would have secure borders. Again, this goes back to both their arrogance and also how little they think of the American people, that they can so quickly lie directly to our faces and think we're just going to be like, oh, okay, I guess because you say it's secure, I guess you want us to blame the other guys. I think more and more people, even those who aren't politically involved and who aren't really paying attention to this, as you said, a lot of your guests are obviously very connected and very, very concerned about this because we're seeing this national security threat here at home. I hope that there are more Americans who are opening their eyes to this across party lines. It was both heartbreaking and maddening what I saw and experienced over these last few days in California. People I spoke to, because I went and I spoke to Border Patrol, I spoke to many of these different illegal immigrants that we came across. I went and saw what the process is that they use to come across the border. Many of them wanting to be apprehended by Border Patrol. So they can get that piece of paper that says, okay, yep, you are seeking asylum. Maybe you have a court date in 3 months, 3 years, who knows how long. But this one individual in particular who came in from Colombia, I was talking to him and I asked how he got here. And he said, oh, I flew in through Tijuana. Tijuana is just a few miles down the road from where we were. Came across the border. There was a few makeshift tents that were there on the side of the highway. It is a known destination for people illegally coming into our country, where if they get to that point, they sit there, there will be a Border Patrol van that will come and pick them up.
What?
Our Border Patrol agents are essentially becoming, are being used as Uber drivers for these people who come in. They've all got cell phones, they've got snacks. They came in, I as I was sitting there over the course of maybe an hour, there were different groups that walked up, happy, hopping and skipping. This group, and I'm not saying this is everyone, but this group in particular did not look like they had been through any challenging, physically arduous journey to get to that point. They had all of the creature comforts that they needed for that day. And then they went and got picked up. A friend of mine who I was with, he was talking to this guy from Colombia. They exchanged phone numbers. And within 24 hours, Kelsey, because I asked him, I was like, how did you get here? Oh, I flew in through Tijuana and then I walked over. Okay, well, what are your plans? Where do you want to go? And he said, I'm going to Utah. I said, oh, have you been there before? Yes, I've been there before. And I've got a very good friend there. I've got a woman there that I'm going to see in Utah. So he texted my friend who I was with the very next day. And he said, hey, I'm all clear. I'm through, went through all the processing, and I'm headed to Utah within 24 hours. It is a system that is in place with people amongst the cartels and criminals who are profiting from this system. People are being exploited every step of the way. And the rule of law, our laws, our national security, our borders are basically non-existent at this point. I met people from Brazil. I met people from Honduras, from Colombia, from Turkey. I came across a family up in the mountains that separated Tijuana from San Diego with a couple of suitcases. They're from Turkey. They said one group of them was going to Boston. The other group was going to Texas. People are coming here and exploiting this open border policy because they know that they can. There were some people from Venezuela we spoke to who very clearly had gang tattoos all over their faces. Absolutely at that moment, high on drugs, like not even at present. And speaking to us with a kind of arrogance that was almost throwing a middle finger up, like, you guys can't do anything to stop us. And we know it. And you know it. And we're here. We are exploiting your system to come in and take advantage here in our country. And this isn't even getting into those who are, you know, you look at the Hezbollah sleeper cells. You look at how many known terrorists that have been on our terror watch list have been apprehended. What to speak of the many who have not been. We saw along the border fence tons of ID cards, passports torn in half, ID cards bent, cell phones destroyed, people's government issued identification being destroyed all along the border. Well, what happens then when they go through Border Patrol processing and they say, well, what's your name? Where are you from? I don't have my ID. The cartel took my ID. What are they doing? These people are still being allowed into our country, but without any kind of ability to do a real thorough vetting. I'm putting together a short documentary. I went there and brought my husband, who's a cinematographer, and a few cameras, specifically because most people in America don't know. They don't know what's happening. Most people are compassionate. They hear people are suffering in oppressed countries. They're escaping violence. They're like, well, we, of course we want to help people escape suffering. But what they're not being told is how the cartels are being assisted by the Biden-Harris administration's open border policy to exploit these people, to traffic in women and children, to traffic their and to support their drug and criminal enterprises. This is a much bigger problem that poses a threat to our national security and the safety and well-being of our communities. I could go on and on about this, but it is it's a timely issue that you are raising again, because this is one of those things where there's a clear distinction in our political leadership of who stands for open borders and doesn't care about safe communities or our national security and the Democrat elite, and many Republicans stepping up and saying this is unacceptable. We have to take action to solve and address this.
Well, I'm really glad that you have gone down and documented this. And I know there's other individuals that have been trying to sound the alarm about the border, including, and I can't believe I'm saying these words, Dr. Phil. He has taken it apart. When did we ever think my like network father would be, because that's, I hear him in my head as an adult now, would be at the border expressing this level of concern where I have not seen it in the United States media, the way independents have been discussing it. It is for sure not being spoken about in Canada under the guides of the CBC, CTV, Global, or any of the government paid funded media. We know that for sure. Rebel is doing their best. But I think the thing that is a little shocking to me is we pitch these ideas and these ways of life to our countries as compassion, as empathy, as the ways that we should be helping uplift individuals and protect them from their tyrannical governments. But that's just not the reality. We're seeing that with MAID. We're seeing this with immigration. We're seeing this with a multitude of issues. You pick them. It's all under the eyes of DEI and compassion. And when we look back at history and we look at things that were guided from empathy and compassion, they often led down a path that was quite terrifying. I'm seeing that here. I'm seeing that in some of your states. But moreover, I'm seeing individuals come into America that, while we're seeing the repercussions, young children are being killed on, you know, when they're out for runs, police officers are being murdered in the streets, and they're being walked off and left. I mean, take a great example over the weekend. You had Biden, was it Biden? I don't even know if he knew he was there. Then you had Obama. It's okay to giggle. It's fine. You had Obama and you had others while you had, you know, the former president actually where he should be, which was with the families of somebody that was killed unnecessarily because of these open border policies. So how
that,
do you...
That example, I just want to put like a highlight and a bold and an underline on that, that contrast that just happened. Mm-hmm. Where you had three former presidents, as you mentioned, with or current. You had President Obama, President Biden, and President Clinton all gathered together at a $25,000 a plate fundraiser featuring Lizzo. And then you had President Trump going to the funeral and memorial service for an NYPD officer who was just killed in the line of duty. The contrast is one that people really should pay attention to when it comes to what are their priorities? What are their priorities? And this is what I talk about so much in my book. People ask me, like, why are they doing this? Why are they allowing these borders to remain open? Why is it that they're allowing criminals to run rampant in their streets? Like, there's not really, like, this just doesn't make sense. The only way it makes sense is when you recognize correctly that these are people who care only about power, maintaining power, holding on to more power, and they're willing to sacrifice the American people, our future, and our country and freedom in their pursuit of more power. When we look at it within that prism of power versus leaders who actually care for the interests of the American people, then it starts to make sense why they're doing what they're doing, why they're working with big tech to silence voices that they don't like, why they're introducing a central bank digital currency to surveil and control how we spend our money, why they're interested in ensuring that they have control over, which we didn't mention this with TikTok in the context of X. You know, the Biden administration has worked directly with Meta and Facebook, Instagram, and Google to control, quote unquote, misinformation, disinformation, what we're allowed to see, what we're allowed to say, all in the name of protecting democracy and ensuring a safe and a secure election. It's not a stretch. It shouldn't be a surprise why Elon Musk's response to this whole TikTok bill was, well, tomorrow it could be X. Why? Because he's refusing to go along with their government control anti-free speech agenda. And that's where all of these paths lead back to the same place. They are attacking freedom because they care more for power. And our founders recognize that the natural enemy to liberty is power. And it is playing out right before our eyes today.
It really is. It's hyper concerning to see those three former and current presidents all putting so much attention toward individuals who have already bought in. Lizzo has already bought in. She's been on the cover of Fitness and Health. She is the epitome of health. Don't you know that, Tulsi? They've already bought in. It's okay. I can say this. I'm not running for anything.
I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you. This is part of again, you know, there are so many different avenues and vehicles that are used towards this goal of power. You know, you go back and look at the Obama administration. He talked a lot about, reining in big pharma and true accountability in the midst of an opioid crisis. And then when push came to shove, when people within the Department of Justice actually built actionable cases against these manufacturers of opioids, not because they were making it, but because of how they were manipulating people and lying to people to get them addicted on their drugs, they chose not to go and prosecute. And this is open source information that's out there. There are big donors in the big pharma world. There are big donors in the military industrial complex. There are big donors in the mainstream media. There are big donors in this. Here's the connection between Lizzo and what I'm talking about here. Is during COVID, it stuck with me when Jen Psaki, who was the White House press secretary, when she was asked by a reporter, hey, are you guys going to encourage people to, you know, eat healthy and exercise, try to lose weight and strengthen their immune system as a way to prevent getting COVID or having serious health consequences because of COVID? And she couldn't even say that. She couldn't even say that. She said, well, we will be issuing all guidance that comes from the CDC, which currently is everyone must get the vaccine. And this is where, again, it's just like the arrogance is out of control. Mm-hmm. And the revelation or the revealing of these people really being puppets for the big money classes who fund their campaigns, which allow them to remain in power, is revealed. Everybody knows if you do your best to try to eat healthy and exercise, go for a walk, go to the gym, you know what's in your food, maybe less chemicals, less processed food, more whole foods, things that you can see and touch and know and understand, like that is just good for you overall. Mm-hmm. That shouldn't be a controversial statement to make. And the fact that we had a spokesperson for the President of the United States unwilling to state that fact, tells us all that we need to know about who they are and what they really care about.
I would like to think, and this is where I've kind of concluded, and I'm curious of your perspective on this. I would like to think that we have driven the American and Canadian population into such turmoil that they can't help but be this close to the problem. So they don't have the capacity to look up and see what's truly going on and the erosion of their democracy, the erosion of their, oh my gosh, have you seen the food pyramid America has recently put out? The erosion of not only the American family and what it means to be a part of a community, but the diet restrictions and what we are telling people is healthy. I would like to think that it's because Americans and Canadians are so they're struggling so much they can't be bothered to pay attention.
Yeah.
Or is this so much worse than what I'm realizing? Because I try to give parents and individuals the benefit of the doubt that with the tax hikes, that with the constant wars, that with the COVID overreach and just demoralization of the psyche of the individual and the fear mongering, that they just don't have the capacity, because Canadians and Americans cannot be this blind. They cannot be this tone deaf, and they cannot be this delusional to truly believe that cornflakes and orange juice is better than a piece of meat. We cannot be this far gone, can we? Please tell me we're not, Tulsi.
No, I really, and I know this just from, and I'm grateful to have had the opportunity, and I'm continuing to travel across our country where I'm able to speak with and listen to people who have very different backgrounds. You know, we both live in very, very big countries that are unique. You know, I was in rural Michigan recently, and we had a big event in the back of someone's yard under a big tent and a farm. And it was such an awesome opportunity. We were talking about a lot of the things that we're talking about here with regard to freedom and what's at stake in this election. And they're seeing the impacts of that at the local level with their local government. But there's so many people who literally are just trying to figure out, okay, with all of this inflation, everything is more expensive at the grocery store. I'm not making much more money. My dollar is not going nearly as far as it used to. Meanwhile, I'm trying to figure out how do I raise my kids and get them the education that they need when there's all this education indoctrination happening and parents are being, like you said, it is being shoved directly in your face so that you have to pay attention to it. Whereas I think a lot of people are just like, oh, previously, without having to be confronted with the realities of this shift that the Democrat elite in our country are shoving down people's throats, is a lot easier to say, like, ugh, I don't like politics. Mm. I hate it. Don't want to be involved. I don't know if I'm going to vote. If I vote, I'll probably just vote for the person whose name I recognize. That's getting harder and harder to do because it is in many cases literally knocking on your door. When you have these atrocious crimes being committed on your streets and you hear that the district attorney, for example, in New York is not prosecuting violent crimes, when you have a young Marine on a subway there who actually does what a good Samaritan should do in trying to help protect others in the face of potential physical harm, he's the guy being prosecuted and charged with murder versus people who are actively criminals, violent criminals on our streets, who are committing murder and robberies and other violent crimes. I keep going back to, you know, the message that I put in this book is intentionally and critically timed for this moment. And it's for those who may not be paying attention to politics. You and I read a lot of the same sources. We have a lot of the same friends. We're connected and we pay attention and we're using our platforms to be able to tell people what's really going on. But I know from firsthand experience that there's a lot of folks who just don't have the time and capacity to do the deep dives and to figure out what's going on. And then, of course, there are others who, for, you know, partisan reasons, perhaps, or perhaps out of fear, are not willing to see the truth, which is an even greater concern.
I mean, absolutely is a huge concern. And I am glad that you're putting this book out when you are, because for somebody to step forward, which I have to say, when we were watching the 2020 election, I pay very much attention to the United States. A lot of my business, the majority of my listeners, you name it, are American. And I pay a lot of attention because these people are coming to me asking me questions about your political system. I shouldn't know as much as I do, but I do. So here we are. When I was watching the 2020 elections, I think everyone around me could not believe that you were not being brought forward. You were by far the most equipped individual to be running government. So for you to leave the Democratic Party the way that you did, knowing Hawaii's position, and sorry, I don't say it with a great accent, super white over here. you have, you know, the traditional route of the Democratic kind of party over there and the way people were running their countries. when you decided to up and leave the Democratic Party, how hard was that for you to grapple with? I mean, I feel like that had to be a huge shift with your families, with your local community. How have you not only wrestled with that, but how have you stepped forward into this new place? So I would say with grace.
It actually wasn't something that I struggled with.
Okay.
Because first of all, I've always been an independent-minded person. I wasn't raised in a family that was, you know, had generations of like, you know, my grandfather was Republican, my dad was Republican, or Democrat, or vice versa. So there was no familial pressure. When I joined the Democratic Party, when I was 21, I joined the Democratic Party. I was running for state house in Hawaii, really passionate about conservation and protection of our environment. And I looked at the two parties out here in Hawaii, really within the context of trying to figure out who do I most align with? And ultimately chose to run as a Democrat because at that time, over 20 years ago, I saw a party that was a big open tent party that encouraged people with different ideas and thoughts and backgrounds, religions to come together, a party that celebrated freedom, that, you know, stood alongside the ACLU at that time, that still defended free speech, even for people whose speech they didn't like. It was the party of the little guy. Mm-hmm. And those were the things that resonated most with me. I've been an independent-minded person throughout. I've been in and out of politics throughout that time, but it really came down to a decision that was based on the reality that through my 8 years in Congress, being vice chair of the Democratic National Committee, being a candidate running for president in the Democratic primary, in each of those ways, I shared a lot of the things that we're talking about here, speaking out against the military-industrial complex, talking about the importance of freedom, sharing my own love for our country, and how we've got to get back to those foundational principles as Americans, and certainly as leaders of the Democratic Party. Well, I realized the Democratic Party nationally had no interest in that. We were not aligned, actually. And so it got to the point where I could no longer associate myself or be aligned with a political party that doesn't love our country and that hates freedom and is doing all that they can to undermine it. A party that is consistently putting their own selfish interests and their drive for power over the interests of the American people, over the interests of peace and freedom, security and prosperity. And that was what drove my decision to leave the Democratic Party. I knew how the mainstream propaganda media would respond. It was very predictable because I've heard all of the, you know, the attacks that they use before. But the thing that I was very pleasantly surprised by was an outpouring of messages and DMs on social media and phone calls I got from people who I've never met before, but who were expressing their gratitude in my being able to say so many of the things that they'd been feeling. People from across the country, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, different people who have been afraid, actually afraid to speak out. This feeling of self-censorship in this environment of cancel culture and retaliation and, you know, hey, my small business relies on my Instagram account and I can't afford to be shadow banned or suppressed, so I just keep my mouth shut. There are a lot of people out there who are sincerely concerned for our country. And my hope is that, and I feel like we're seeing this more and more, but my hope is that the more people like you and I speak up, the more it will embolden others to know that they should too, that if you're concerned about your freedom, we defend our freedom by exercising them and using the power of the people through our voices, through our votes, to stand up against those who are abusing their power at the cost of our freedom and the well-being of our country.
I recently listened to your incredible interview with Tucker. I'm so glad he has left and has started his platform. I can't get enough of his interviews lately.
He's fantastic.
What a wonderful human. Thank God for him. I heard you say something that to this, I listened to the interview again because I wanted to make sure I heard it clear. the Democrats are the party of war. Yeah. That, knowing what war is terrifying. I very much considered myself a liberal in Canada until I realized that that just does not align with me. It doesn't have any way, shape, or form taken on what I hoped it would when my parents, when I was a child. Becoming a grown adult and understanding the political system and how it truly works and the backdoor deals and the who pays who. When you step forward into this, as you're doing your book tours and guaranteed being, you know, considered for someone's VP, I really, really hope that you are. You give a lot of hope to those that want to leave their political party, that feel politically homeless. You show us that there can be, you know, comfort in speaking up and saying what needs to be said, regardless of punishment or censorship or any of the things so many of us experience in the podcast world. Are you concerned about the voting machines, the process, the opening it up to no IDs? Can you talk a little bit about that? Because if I'm concerned, I'll bet you must be.
Yes, yes. This has been a concern for years. While I was still serving in Congress, I recognized the threat to our democracy coming from an unsecure election and the need for us as voters to have confidence in the integrity by ensuring that we have the ability to audit the mm-hmm. election. So I introduced legislation in Congress because I saw they had like this big, I forget the name of it, but in Vegas every year they have this big hackers conference where they bring in hackers from all over the world, all different ages, and to try to test the strength of our systems that we rely on. And I saw this piece about how, I think it was like a 14 or 15 year old girl from Florida hacked into an electronic election system in less than 10 minutes. Pretty alarming mm-hmm. when you considered how either, you know, there are both domestic and foreign actors who could find it in their best interest to try to manipulate the outcome of elections. So many movies have been done about this. This is not a stretch of the imagination. And so this was back in 2016. I was on a committee in Congress where we had hearings and we talked about this. And my legislation was very simple. It basically mandated the use of paper ballots, or if you were going to use an electronic machine, there had to be an auditable paper record of every vote cast, essentially a receipt. In our machines here in Hawaii, for example, I'm just one of those. I love the tradition of going and voting on election day and voting in person. And so you go and you punch in your vote in the machine, and in real time, it gives you a copy of who you voted for every seat. And you can see through a little window that they've got a copy as well that they are saving in the Office of Elections. So it's not paper in the traditional sense, but you have a paper backup. You know, in America, elections are administered locally. There's a huge, there are very real limitations to what the federal government can and cannot dictate to states in how they run their elections. It's just the way it's set up. And so the bill was crafted carefully to match the federal funding of administering federal elections to support localities in actually implementing this. Because that's the usual thing is like, well, it's going to cost too much. We can't afford it. I was unfortunately pretty disturbed by how many people in Congress express no interest in passing this legislation or any other form of legislation like this. Again, this was back in 2016, 2017, 2018. I saw how Virginia, in this hearing, Virginia is one of those odd year election states. They recognize the vulnerability of their own electronic systems early enough for them to implement changes. And I believe this was a 2017 or 2019 year election where it was the most, I don't know if they got a single complaint about the election that year, because they had done the work and they had implemented those changes to make sure that there was a paper record of every vote cast. There are simple solutions to the challenge that we face, and why people rightfully are distrustful of the security of our elections. Knowing this, it's still critical that we all actually do get out and vote. that we, you know, you can have volunteer watchers at the polling centers observing and making sure that these votes are being counted properly. There are actions that we can take, but given our election is just months away, we have to vote. We have to vote. There are a lot of means and ways to do so. They differ in every state, but we have to make sure that our voice is heard. Otherwise, we will not be in a position to actually fix these very real problems, which include, as you mentioned, these no voter ID laws, which have never made sense to me at all, knowing that you need an ID for everything.
ID to go to the grocery store during COVID.
Right. And you need an ID to get cold medicine, you know, in some pharmacies. I mean, and this is where people have talked about it. You know, they're all like, oh, you know, poor Black communities are the ones being discriminated against. Voter ID laws are somehow racist. But how racist of a statement is that to assume that somehow Black people living in poor communities are not able to get ID cards like everybody else? And I think one of the things Kamala Harris said was like, well, they don't have access to copy machines there or printers or something. It's just, again, very offensive on its face when you actually look at what they're doing and the people they're proclaiming to try to save or care about.
Yeah, they've never cared or saved. And she is a DEI hire herself. So I'm surprised that... surprised that she would actually be allowed to go out and say those, considering
how... Are you really, though? Are you really surprised?
Damn it, Tulsi. Don't call me on my stuff right now. I am here interviewing you, miss. This is not your turn.
Here's what I was surprised by with regard to Kamala Harris. On that 2020 debate stage, when I raised the very real concerns and issues about her record as a prosecutor, as a district attorney, as... Attorney General of the state of California, a record she is very proud of. She was touting it on that campaign trail and how she would be a prosecutor president. And yet it was telling to me that nobody in the mainstream media was actually saying, okay, well, let's talk about your record and go through some of the many examples. I mean, the things that I didn't even bring up was how she was essentially promoting kids being arrested. I was homeschooled, by the way. She was promoting parents being punished, fines, tickets, breaking the law for kids who were not in school during school hours. Well, my parents kept us inside during school hours because they were afraid of that exact thing happening. Mm-hmm. And Kamala Harris was laughing about it. Obviously, her issue with laughing about whether or not she'd smoke marijuana when she kept people who'd smoke marijuana in jail. I mean, the double standard there was great. The thing that surprised me was, number one, that the mainstream media was not willing to hold her to account for her record. It was clear she was the chosen one that they were kind of laying down the red carpet for. But then also how unprepared she was that I raised when I raised these issues and asked these questions. But now, as time has gone on since then, I am no longer surprised because it doesn't appear that she is prepared for anything. What to speak of the serious job that she has, being a breath away from the presidency and serving as commander-in-chief for our military. It is actually something that every American should be very alarmed about, given who she is. And one of the biggest concerns is how people like her, people like Nikki Haley, people like Hillary Clinton, are the kinds of women who've never served in the military and who feel you get this sense of insecurity from them and the need to exert or prove their strength, and how they would do so. They would do so by using our military and in deployments or dropping bombs or starting a war or whatever way, shape, or form that may take. They would use our brothers and sisters in uniform to prove that strength to themselves, to the people, and to the world, with disastrous and costly consequences.
I highly encourage those individuals to look themselves in the mirror, because they're just projecting their mass amount of insecurities, as most women do when they can't handle themselves on a stage next to another powerful woman. That's very clear. It was incredibly evident watching that debate that she was very terrified of you and had every right to be. She had zero clue how to answer questions, let alone be able to answer anything on the spot. It was baffling to me. It still is and will always be known as the DEI hire, not as one that earned the seat. And I'm happy to say that loud. Speaking of, with the short amount of time that we have, I'm going through some of these questions, but there is something else I want to address with you. I'm sure by now you have seen today that today is officially now the Transgender Day of Visibility on Easter from the White House by President Joe Biden. How do we feel about the DEI erasing all of not only our history, our women's rights, our rights to be in our own change rooms, and the fact that women no longer exist under the eyes of this current 2024 administration?
There's a lot to unpack there, Kelsey.
I'm sorry.
At the heart of it, I know there is. I mean, it's a very serious issue. Once again, that is often presented in this pretty little package of equality and care and compassion for one another. The fact that this is happening on Easter Sunday is a slap in the face to every Christian here in the United States and in the world. I go into some detail in my book about how the Democrat elite are trying to eliminate God from every facet of public life and the very serious result on our society of that, and how in particular, as we've seen again throughout COVID and in many other examples, how they are particularly have their sights set on Christians. We see how in the guise of gender-affirming care and transgender equality, they're essentially, yes, they are denying the existence of women. They're changing our language to reflect that denial, referring to us as birthing persons or chest feeders or whatever the moniker may be, but they're actually changing this language in our congressional laws, in legal documents. This is not just one person's opinion. Language impacts culture, and culture impacts our society. So this is going to continue to have very long-standing ramifications. But really at the heart of this, that's the most insidious element, is their rejection of objective truth.
Mm.
If there is no such thing as a woman, there is no such thing as a man, there are no biological differences between the two, then you're removing, as one example, that means that only those in power, the Democrat elite, they're the only ones who can tell us what is true and what is not. And mm-hmm. that may change on any given day. They are the self-appointed authority, putting them in a position of they want to be God because they want to be that supreme authority. And then you look at how they're telling us that there is no such thing as truth unless they tell us it's true. They tell us that we shouldn't be afraid of minor attracted people, something that the world knows to be pedophiles. They tell us that babies as young as newborns are able to project their gender identity, which may be different from their biological sex. The list goes on and on. That display this insanity that can only come from a very evil and dark place. And that darkness is what emanates once again from their desire to be in power.
It is a little terrifying seeing not only the slow drip into society that it has been, but what it is doing to our children with the gender-affirming care, seeing the UK walk some of this back while Canada extends it even further while saying our taxpayer dollars can now go towards immigrants who have come in to actually provide them with gender-affirming surgery, all under the guides of empathy and compassion. The reason I bring this up to you is because I've heard you speak about it before, but I wanted to dive a little deeper with it, because when people are voting, which again, I do hope you get picked for at least a VP slot here somewhere, because we need some common sense and we need some stability. And yeah. It does feel like the longer we go down this path, the DEI movement, whether it's with our flight attendants, our pilots, our surgeons, it feels like somebody has to put a hard stick in the sand and say, no more. We are not eroding this any longer. It is now dangerous to society, and we are seeing the fall of societies because of this. So for you, are you concerned about the mafia that is the LG? I don't even know them all. I'm not even being rude. I don't anymore.
There's been a number that's been introduced.
I think.
I don't know recently. It's hard to keep track of. But the seriousness that you just laid out about what is at stake with the demise of our society and our country is real. It's very real. This is not, you know, hyperbolic rhetoric or fear mongering or anything else. Any objective person who's paying attention and seeing the truth of what's going on, I don't know how you cannot be gravely concerned. I don't know where I will end up, whether it'll be in a government position or not, but regardless of where I am, I will do all that I can to continue to speak the truth, to continue to be that voice of common sense. And that person who we have to be able to come together to address these issues and these problems that affect us all. Republicans and Democrats are going to disagree every single day about, you know, well, how best do you provide education and what do we do about healthcare? And you know, there will always be different ideas, and that's okay. That's a good thing. We should have those debated loudly in front of everyone, which increasingly isn't happening, which drives that partisan divide. But if we don't defend our freedoms now, we will lose them forever. And we won't have the freedom to even have these discussions as you and I are having today. And you know that much more than those of us here, because Canada is unfortunately much farther down along this path. In some incredibly alarming ways.
Yeah, I can't wait for CSIS to show up at the door after April 12th. It's going to be fun times for me. That's all right. I'm not suicidal, Tulsi.
Neither am I.
Fantastic.
Like I said,
I'm super glad.
Every day is a blessing. I am grateful for life.
I agree. I know that we are running out of time here. I would love to have you back to talk a little more in depth about veterans issues, about some of the people that are so near and dear to our hearts and to those that listen to this show regularly. It has been an incredible experience to sit in front of somebody who has character and integrity, unlike the majority of our current serving individuals in our governments. I would like to now give you the opportunity to let everyone know, not only how do they support you and your missions, but this book that you have written, and trying to get this scheduled, I know how hard you have been working and how focused you have been. And to see the people that have come out to support you, like Joe Rogan and Tucker Carlson, all the way to Meghan McCain, it is imperative that this book is bought and purchased and put on every library that will have it, with anybody that will listen to it. How do people support you, get your book, and help you on your mission to really just help some sanity and unity come back into Congress?
Thank you very much, Kelsey. Our mission is a no-fail mission, and it is one that our founders laid out for us in our founding documents, and that mission is to save our country and defend freedom. It's why I wrote this book. It's called For Love of Country, Leave the Democrat Party Behind. It's available now on pre-sales. You can order a signed copy on TulsiGabbard.com, or you can get it on Amazon or wherever you get your books. You mentioned libraries, and I'm learning this book process now, but a friend of mine in North Carolina said that she specifically is going to order the book for the 5 or 6 libraries in her community. And so if this is something you feel called to do, to inject some truth and make it available for people in your communities, that's one way that you can help. There's a call to action in the book, and you know, I've had people who already see the truth, who are already bought in on this mission, and they understand how serious it is, but they've bought the book for maybe their sister or brother who maybe isn't paying attention or isn't quite convinced, or they're saying, well, maybe my daughter will believe you because she won't listen to me. Think about the person in your life who may need a little bit of a nudge, or to hear the story of someone who joined the Democratic Party over 20 years ago, saw the truth and left the Democratic Party to help them along in their journey of understanding how they can make a positive impact on our country and take a stand for freedom. I appreciate so much your support. The book is called For Love of Country. And thank you, Kelsey, for who you are and how you are serving our community of veterans and having the courage to be a truth teller, given the challenges and threats that you face in doing so.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you so much. All right, everyone. That's been Tulsi Gabbard. You stick with me. Everyone else, we'll see you all next week.